If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Sing of rivers now, the ones I'll never cross. And if I sing along, will that river make me wise? Craft another melody, we'll holler at sunrise. There's a buckskin highway headed north, your choices east or west. At that lonely river town, where the barfly knows you best. I'll never where the snow can fall like cannonballs and lonesome wind blows bitter. Now if you're weary, well, I don't mind you passing through. Those seats are for the cowboys, though they ain't for me or you. It was the wrath of a man near 100 years ago. Can't you hear the ghosts of miners wailing the hell they dug below? Now one thing marks the reason and another's on my mind. That one thing lasts forever, and that's the darkness in their eyes. I'll never know how we came to Wise River, where the snow can fall like cannonballs and a lonesome wind blows bitter. Only the river's left for digging boys, and they'll fly to jump your claim. It ain't the storms and blow that'll make you dread the road. It's the distance that grows heavy now beneath the weight of snow. Snow can fall like cannonballs and a lonesome wind blows bitter. I'll always know why we came to Wise River, where the snow can fall like cannonballs and then a lonesome wind blows bitter. Where the snow can fall like cannonballs and a lonesome wind blows bitter.
You've been listening to Wise River, the title track from the forthcoming record from the Kitchen Dwellers, due out April 29th, wherever you get music. I can't think of a better ambassadors for the state of Montana, at least musically, than the Kitchen Dwellers. Their very old-school blend of bluegrass combined with effects and crazy covers has always had me thinking that this was a very cool band. Their third album, Wise River, is a tribute to a Montana river that runs in southwestern region of the state and empties into Big Hole River. While they make Bozeman, Montana home, about 2 hours away from Wise River, it's clear that the Kitchen Dwellers' sonic palette is matched only by the picturesque sights of their home state. I caught up with guitarist and vocalist Max Davies to talk about the forthcoming record, working with producer Corey Wong, yeah, you heard that right, Corey Wong, and much more, including getting a sense of how they chose the covers that they add to their ever-evolving set lists. The new album is called Wise River. And it's an ode to back home, right? There's a river in Montana called the Wise River, right?
Yeah, there's this little town kind of in our neck of the woods in southwest Montana. And it's a town, if you can call it that. It's just kind of a little corner bar and some fishing shops. And it's this T intersection basically, but there's tons of good camping and outdoor activities and fishing. And yeah, so we spent a lot of time there, and that's where kind of the title track came from and the name of the album. And, you know, we have a bunch of cool artwork and photos from down in Wise River. So it's kind of the encompasses the entire project, really.
It's kind of weird, but there aren't a lot of spokespeople, at least in the music sphere, for Montana. Is that a badge, an honor that you hold that in high regard in bringing attention to your home state?
I think the reason probably for that is that there just aren't a whole lot of, you know, there is music history through Montana, the Mission Mountain Wood Band, and the Little Smokies are some of our contemporaries that are from Montana. Right. But there hasn't been a whole lot of people kind of advocating for Montana and just kind of being a little more vocal about their love for the state. And that's just kind of something that everyone in the band, it's a commonality. We all love Montana and love spending time doing the things, you know, that the people do there. So yeah, we just kind of feel like you write what you know about, and you write about what inspires you and the places that inspire you. And it just kind of it naturally comes out. It's like, you know, someone from New York, Empire State of Mind. It just kind of comes out in the music that you write.
That's great. It makes a lot of sense. Your music, your sound continues to evolve. I mean, it's still obviously, given the four of you are all string instruments, but your sound continues to evolve, whether it's the covers that you guys do in your sets or just taking chances. There's some piano on this record, I think. There's new things that are always being introduced. Is it important for you guys to stretch the boundaries of the genre and maybe come up with something new and unique that's specific to the Kitchen Dwellers?
100%. Yeah. We still identify ourselves as being a bluegrass band. We came up in the bluegrass kind of scene and in the bluegrass jam circles and picking, you know, late nights, but our influences and kind of the reason why people got into music in the band in the first place are so varied that it doesn't make a lot of sense for us just to be playing just bluegrass. All the music that we write is we're kind of everyone writes something, and then when they bring it to the band, it kind of it gets the band treatment. Like it just kind of molds and changes until it eventually sounds like, you know, the Kitchen Dwellers. So we love bluegrass. We are also just trying to, you know, do what we, what excites and what keeps us happy, you know, moving forward as a band.
Right. It's been a bit since you put out 2019, I think, is when Muirmaid came out. It's been a bit since you put out a record. There's been EPs and covers and cover EPs, Reheated Volume 2 and other things going on. And of course, the pandemic played a large part in you guys sort of being on hiatus. But it's interesting that even with the pandemic, you guys still managed to do a lot, I think, compared to other bands of your size and fandom and whatever. You did a lot of stuff during the pandemic, you know, live from out there and appearing at other different, let's call them virtual festivals. Your management team had you really busy. Was that important for you guys to stay busy?
That was extremely important for so many reasons. None of us wanted to, well, I guess even, you know, it was such a gigantic pause. It's not like we were really going to go out and get normal jobs. I mean, life as we know it took a break. So it wasn't so much that we were trying to stay busy so that we weren't forced to go do something else, but so we just, things were going so well and we were really kind of feeling a bit of a groove that we didn't want to stop. And so we definitely talked with our management about how to keep things going forward. One of the things that really helped us is that we all live in the same area. So we joked around a lot during COVID. We were like, we're basically still on tour, but we're just doing it from home. Yeah, we did the Dine From Out There, where, you know, we would go down to Denver and we'd play these really small number shows where it was basically a dinner that you would play, and you'd also get a really awesome meal cooked for you. So that we did a whole bunch of different stuff. We did these isolated concerts with Andy Frasco and Mahali, and we kind of drove around and just like filmed everything from really random locations in the West. And yeah, we basically did whatever we could to stay busy, and that's why we were able to come up with a new album. We had the time and the ability to write a bunch of new material, and we figured out how to record it. So and just staying busy for our own sanity and mental health was huge. We couldn't just stop, because that wouldn't be good. So yeah.
Let's talk a bit about the record, Wise River. It's comes out April 29th. There are 10 tracks on the record, and you know, you sing on, I would say, I think it's like probably 7, if not 8 out of the 10, if memory serves.
Yeah, I do lead on a couple, and then harmonies on a bunch. So it's a good mix. Yeah, Torin sings the most on this one, and then yeah, Joe's got a couple on there. I've got a couple on there. Swain even did some background vocals on a track. So we got everybody involved this time around, which is great.
And forgive me, I don't know who played piano on, I think, what track was that? Was that on What It Takes or somewhere down the run?
A couple. So yeah, Kevin Gassingway, he does a bunch of projects with Corey Wong, and he is just awesome. He came in on the very last day. We recorded this whole album in 4 days. It was like boom, boom, boom. So fast paced, so crazy to do it in 4 days. And on the very last day, we had Kevin come in, and he played stuff on Stand at Ease, What It Takes. Their Names of the Trees. He did those three for sure. He might have done one or two others, but yeah, he did some really great stuff on all those tracks. On What It Takes, he did like piano and organ. He did a little bit of everything.
It sounds great. You snuck in Corey Wong's name there, but let's give him a lot more than just a sneak. So Corey produced this record. I think the last record was self-produced, if I'm not mistaken.
We did Mermaid. Mermaid was with Pandolfi, Chris Pandolfi from the Stringdusters.
Okay.
Yep. Some of the Reheateds and the smaller EP stuff, those have been self-produced.
Right. That's where I'm confused.
But, right.
So it's just a significant departure from somebody like Pandolfi, who's, you know, 100% invested in bluegrass music and understands you guys from seeing you guys so much, to somebody like Corey, who is a bad MF-er on funk guitar. It's just something totally different, probably. Why did you approach Corey on this project?
Well, a lot of that has to do just kind of with a connection with our management and Corey. I've been a huge fan. I think everyone in the band has been a huge fan of Corey for his solo stuff, and then also with the stuff with Volfpeck. And he's just kind of one of those guys that just puts so much out, and he's just kind of an enigma in the way that he is with music. I mean, he just produces so much. So he was a bit of a hero, and to put it lightly, and when, you know, we heard that it was a possibility, because I guess Corey had kind of an introduction to bluegrass music because they were doing live from it was the new Prairie Home Companion live from here.
Yeah.
And Chris Thiele was hosting that, and they were doing it, a lot of them were in Minneapolis, and so Corey was, he was a guest on a lot of those shows, and I think he, through meeting Chris Thiele, was exposed to bluegrass music and got really into acoustic music, and he started to have that on there. I mean, even lately he's been doing a bunch of stuff with Sierra Hall, which has been super cool. Mm-hmm. So I think he kind of had a bit of an interest in acoustic music, and we just started talking to him, and he sounded super interested. And, you know, it was great because I think he understood kind of what we were going for. Sending him demos and stuff, he was like, oh, this isn't necessarily a full-on bluegrass band. We can do a little more production work with it. Some of these songs can really kind of get elevated to a different level, as far as just, you know, on the last Mermaid, it was all acoustic. We had mm-hmm. some crazy fiddle action going on. And so it was, I think it was just to kind of push us out of our comfort zone,
right,
both musically and in the studio. Cause he brings a very professional kind of get shit done attitude, which sometimes we probably need a little push on.
It's interesting because that's a guy that was so busy during the pandemic. I mean, he was prolific. Gosh. Like it felt like a new album every month or whatever for a while there. When did y'all record this record that he had time from touring and putting out his own stuff to spend time with you guys? Well, you only had 4 days, but still.
Yeah. Oh man, I don't even know if I could remember what month we did it in. Mm-hmm. I want to say it was probably over a year ago. Oh, I bet it was last March, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I bet it was last March, maybe even longer. But we went to Minneapolis and we just, we cranked it out in 4 days, and I know that he was super busy. But the one thing that, we learned so much from being in the studio with him, but I can tell you that in those 4 days, he was like, on day one, he's like, oh, I have a phone call to make on Thursday at noon. Like, other than that, he was with us from the very beginning of the day to the very end of the day. Like, sometimes when you're in a studio, you know, people are like in and out, they're working on other stuff. And so just knowing how incredibly busy and how many projects he has going on at the same time, he was completely devoted to us the entire time. Like, he never stepped out of the studio. And that's really, really rare in my experience.
I agree. So you sent him a whole bunch of demos before you guys went in. Did he tweak a lot of stuff, or was it just, you know, we mentioned the piano and organ. Was it just adding little touches, or was there a lot of change?
So we learned a lot about just the creation of a song, and we sent him probably 14 songs, and we knew that we were going to narrow it down to 10. So he kind of helped us figure out he gave us his feedback and input on which ones he wanted. We actually, I think there were like two songs that we ended up saying kind of like, no, we do want this on the album. He had chosen, we agreed on like 8, and we were like, well, we'd like to do these other two. So we threw those in there, and it was just kind of like general feedback. Like, you can, let's put something musical here. Let's add harmonies here. Let's maybe cut out, a verse or something, or like, what are you really trying to say with this verse? So it was very constructive, and having the time, we went back and forth a few times. Like, we would make edits and then we'd send him stuff, and then he would give us a little bit of feedback, and then we'd send him something else. So we really felt like going into the studio, we had these songs pretty much under our belts and ready to crank them out, which is what we had. That was kind of our guidance from him. It was like, you know, when you guys, and this is something that we had did with Chris Pandolfi too, you know, they were like, when you guys come into the studio, these should be down. He was like, you want to have such a laser focus on these mm-hmm. songs. And then when you go into the studio, you allow yourself a little bit of artistic creativity just for being in the studio, that you can kind of alter the songs a little bit, but you want to have them down so much that it's not a worry to actually get it all recorded.
I know that you recorded this album, like you said, probably about a year ago, but you've been road testing some of the songs, at least some of the the singles that have already appeared or have already been out there, Sundown and Wise River, Drowning. How have the fans responded to these songs?
Oh, it's been really fun. They've been really fun to play. Definitely Drowning and the new one Sundown that we put out. They're both pretty heavy songs, especially Sundown. The Sundown probably has the most treatment on it, production wise, with kind of a drum track and the vocals. And we kind of like Sundown, for instance, has kind of a washout in the beginning. And so when we're playing it live, we are usually segging from another song. And when we come into that, and then it, you know, that first kind of chord hits, it's really fun. People have heard it and they're pretty pumped, and it's just kind of it's a fun song to play.
And Drowning, I noticed that in San Diego, you kind of broke up a bit. You did, you know, Drowning into Comet, back into Drowning. Mm-hmm. Was that always the intent with that song, is to sort of use it as a improv kind of segue song or standalone? Like what feels more comfortable for you with that particular song?
That one, it wasn't written intentionally for that. Kind of the way that we, even just when we're talking about set lists and composing set lists, no song is really off the table as far as, oh, we could throw something in the middle of there. Drowning kind of works in the sense that it's in a key that we, you know, play in a lot, and there's just that one section where it breaks down. It seems like it's a very just opportune time. It wasn't necessarily written to be that way, but it that's just kind of how those things happen, you know.
But all of your songs are written with the idea that you will get out and jam them or play them or do something different than the way they potentially appear on the way they're heard on the record, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that there will be a couple of these that we will play, you know, pretty straightforward. They always change, you know, when we might have recorded it a certain way and played it a million times rehearsing a certain way, but then we just start to play it live and we're like, oh, that actually let's try this here. And so they, you know, it's always morphing, it's always changing. And that's just from playing all the time. But I would imagine that a good few of them will be altered and jammed out a little bit, because that's what we like to do.
Set lists. I ask everybody about this because everybody we talk to changes their set list often. Is that a team play? Is it one person gets a crack each night? How do these set lists come together? And how do the set lists come together? And then the second part of that is, how does some of these covers come to be? And I'll ask you specifically about the covers after, but first, how did the set lists come to be?
Yeah, great question. Torin is kind of he heads up the bulk of the set list. So kind of during that day, we're in the van and, you know, we're all just kind of talking about what we want to play. It's also, we think about it a lot as far as how the weekend is going to go. Like, oh, we just did three nights in California and we were like, well, we feel like maybe this one song that kind of feels like a Saturday night song. So we know that we're going to hang on to that for Saturday night. So, on kind of big weekends, we plan out all three nights. Torin kind of heads that up, and then we all kind of, in the green room, we'll just kind of start talking about it. And then that's kind of how we finalize it. And everything, even during the show, it'll change. Like, we'll have a set list, and then mid show, you know, an audible might be called where either we don't have time. I feel like the most common thing is that we run out of time,
right,
with songs. So yeah, that's kind of the gist of that.
So by that logic then, Run for the Roses, I Walk on Gilded Splinters, and Can You Get to That? Three incredibly different songs.
Yep.
Three songs, well, maybe Run for the Roses, but certainly not I Walk on Gilded Splinters, or Can You Get to That? Those are Saturday night songs, apparently, because they were recorded April 9th. How do you choose from, I mean, so diverse, right? Walk on Gilded Splinters originally was New Orleans Way, and then and Traffic has done it, and everybody's done it. And then Run for the Roses, obviously a Garcia tune. And then Can You Get to That is Funkadelic, which is not, from what I understand, not a bluegrass band.
They're not?
No, no, they're not. Yeah, little known fact.
Oh, wow, that's news to me, man.
Right. I know you guys are diverse in your taste, but I mean, there's being diverse and then there's being like taking on songs that you guys have no business necessarily playing, right?
Yeah, we do a lot of things that we shouldn't do. I think that's kind of like you boil down, honestly, the essence of like our band. It's like doing things that we're not really supposed to do. Like I wouldn't, you know, I wasn't even necessarily, I was like, should we, you know, like I'd love to do, Can You Get to That? Should we do that? And then everyone's like, well, why not? That's kind of, really how our band operates is like we don't say no a whole lot, which is really it's nice, and it kind of promotes you to do what you want. And I think you name those three songs and it's like that's also just growing up in the age of the internet and being able to, I mean, I guess you could say the same if you were going to record stores when you were a kid, but really I mean, I just remember at a young age, like being exposed to Dr. John and Funkadelic. And so that's really, we like to play it all. There's really nothing that we won't play. Something will be too hard or complicated, I'm sure. But as far as, you know, what people are willing to do, we try to keep it loose.
As somebody who holds Maggot Brain, the entire record, in such high regard, that would be an interesting experiment to hear you on acoustic, curver off the guitar solos in Maggot Brain. That would be, you would need some effects, I would suggest, but I'm down for listening to it if you guys want to play it.
Well, that's one of the fun things is that we, since we all, you know, play with effects, we try to recreate a lot of things. Like in the Walk on Gilded Splinters, I just got this new thing that makes the guitar sound like an organ, so I can actually play and sound like an organ on the guitar. And it's like, well, that just opens up so many new doors. We knew that we wanted to do something psychedelic. We'd done Careful That Axe, Eugene, and and a handful of other things, and we were like, well, you know, what's a new thing that'll kind of really freak people out? And Torin's really good at that, so Go with Splinters was a good choice.
And Cold Rain and Snow is also a great cover. You guys have fun with the covers, and they've, you know, it's fun to hear. I've always said that bluegrass bands do the best covers because they are such a departure. Not necessarily melodically or even musically, but you just don't think that certain songs will be played. Cold Rain and Snow might be the exception because it sort of is, it lends itself to being acoustic, but Run for the Roses certainly doesn't. And, you know, it's interesting to me that you guys are able to take on these songs. And L.A. Woman's another one. Like, how are you guys, you know, doing L.A. Woman? That's another funny cover.
Yeah. A lot of it's also just where we are. We really, and this is something that Torin is great at as well.
Yeah.
You know, we're in a city and it's like, oh, like, what can we, you know, what can we play tonight that that is appropriate and kind of relates to where we are.
You guys are on tour. You're probably happy to get out on the road again. Is there somewhere that you haven't played yet that you're most excited to play, or are you looking to catch up with old friends at a festival? What's are some of the highlights that you're looking forward to?
Oh man, there's going to be a lot. A lot of it is just going to be seeing old friends. Just, I guess, personally, I'm excited to get to DC. Got a lot of friends in DC that are going to be there. And then, man, I'm trying to think of even where else.
You must be psyched New York. Dome, New York, of course.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Dome Fest is going to be great. We've never actually been to a Dome Fest before, so this is our first one. So yeah, really looking forward to that one.
At summer camp you did remotely last time, so that's going to be fun, right?
Like yep and that's kind of the very end of the whole tour, so it'll be good to wrap up with summer camp.
Right Hey dude, thanks so much for taking the time, really appreciate it. I think the record is fabulous. You guys continue to surprise me on the road with covers, as I've mentioned a few times now. Continued success, and keep doing what you're doing, because it seems to be working, and your fan base and your music is growing exponentially with each release and with each tour. So congratulations, dude, and keep going.
Ira, thanks a bunch for having me, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks to Max Davies for joining us. For more on the Kitchen Dwellers, visit their website at kitchendwellers.com or give them a follow on social media. If you like what you heard, please hit subscribe and tell your friends about the Sound Podcast. Before we leave you, let's listen to another track off of Wise River. Here is Stand at Ease.
In my head saying keep on going, you gotta keep on. And I still miss your original soul saying keep on going, you gotta keep on. I still hear your voice in my head saying keep on going, you gotta keep on.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.